The following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
This Spectrum moment takes us to December 1st, 1967. Wilt Chamberlain, arguably the most dominant player in NBA history, scores 52 points against the expansion Seattle Supersonics, becoming the first player in the history of the Spectrum to record a 50-point game.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your parents to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams, and the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel. Our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all at the South Philly Sports Complex. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so take a look. As I always say, the night terrors only last a few hours. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me from his sports palace in Villanova, he truly is our guide, mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers and creator of the Museum of Sports and author of the great book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's Greatest Showman, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. How are you, Lou?
Well, I'm doing good. It's good to have the Sixers back. We'll talk about that in a minute, but it's the Flyers are struggling, and everybody expected that, but they said, give us a few more games. We'll get it together. We think we got the plan. And, of course, the Eagles, it took six games to get it together. They played a crisp, penalty-free, smart game last week. So maybe there is something to the fact that it takes four or five, six games. Of course, but the Eagles, that's half the season. And as you mentioned before, Doug, they got flexed out of a couple of games by the network. So somebody's not real excited about the Eagles.
But they are utilizing a linebacker / fullback who has to declare himself. What's his name? Vince Sumrin, which I thought is kind of cool because I like running. I like fullbacks. It's a dying breed. Hey, coming up today, he was a staple in the Eagles receiving corps for most of the 1990s, and he has one of the longest receiving touchdowns in Eagles history. Freddie Barnett is on the Museum of Sports show today. And his artwork has chronicled international icons from the Pope to Taylor Swift to Philly sports legends. Fine pop artist Perry Milo is on the Museum of Sports show today. And our King of Sports Collectibles is here today to look at what's hot and what's affordable in the memorabilia market and how you can get a sneak peek at what will be at the Museum of Sports from the Depatche memorabilia collection. Nick Depatche Jr. is on the Museum of Sports show today. But up first, our complainer-in-chief, Lou Scheinfeld, has some thoughts on the fact that the Sixers have had a full year to get ready for their season opener and still could not pull off a win.
Well, you know what? It's not the first time. And of course, it's been debated all over the last couple of since last night. Yeah, all day today, everybody's talking about it. All the talk shows, guys will get paid a lot more than you or I to talk about it. But I want to focus on the fact that they had all this time. And now they're talking about ramping up. They have a ramp up plan for Embiid. They have a ramp up plan for the other guy that couldn't play last night. And they're both 34, 35 years old with histories of injuries. But what gets me is how they play, how they're playing. You know, they were up in Boston a couple of weeks ago for a preseason game. Yeah. They got killed. Boston blew them out of the building. It was embarrassing. It was like a regular season game up there. Yeah. And you know what? Boston played their starters. The Eagles, what's our team's name? Sixers. The Sixers did not play their starters. Yeah. They rested everybody. They got killed. It was embarrassing. And you know what? Boston played to win because that's what they do up there. They win. You know, they don't try this experiment. They don't ramp up. They are ramped. They're amped. So last night, I turned it off in the first period. I couldn't watch it any longer. And I'm a long-time fan. But poor shooting, lackluster defense. No excuse for that. They missed 23 of 31 three-pointers. 23 of 31. And now I also see this morning that Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, yeah, announced they're going to expand the league and add more teams. It is so watered down as it is. Doug, there's maybe four elite teams. Then there's four or five teams that are good. And after that, everybody is either mediocre or they stink. And they're going to add more teams. Sometimes the almighty dollar chases you.
Exactly. Well, Marcus Hayes had an interesting opinion piece. Too big for his britches. Embiid's conditioning seems to be the culprit. Of course, he was missing in action last night. We'll be missing for the next few games. And it was basically that, you know, he was out of shape. He poor conditioning. He was Nick Nurse had said, you know, he's lost some weight. Well, why would he be losing weight? He should be staying in shape in the off season. And so you've got that going against him. And you know, he's not getting any younger. So
Embiid himself said he's not going to play back-to-back games the rest of his career, which probably has 2 years left. Yeah. You know, what a great talent. And as Hayes said in his column, talent doesn't always win games. Yeah. Sometimes you got to actually show up.
And the window doesn't stay open forever. And very quickly, we mentioned in the pre-show, the Minnesota Vikings are on Amazon Prime tonight against the Rams. And it's very interesting how nobody was expecting anything from the Vikings this season, particularly when their rookie quarterback sensation from Michigan, McCarthy, went down with a season-ending knee injury. Well, all of a sudden, they're being flexed. The Vikings are being flexed into primetime while our beloved Eagles are getting flexed out of primetime. And obviously, they're looking at where's the audience and where's the interest. And, you know, as long as the Vikings, you know, can maintain, and I as much as I don't like it, because it's hell watching them play, it's almost as much stressful hell as it is watching the Eagles play. But flexing is a way to sort of, it's almost like the NFL's way of saying, you need to get better or we'll go ahead and just have a pay-per-view.
It's embarrassing. And it really is. And the 76ers are embarrassing.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org so you can make a tax-deductible contribution today. And you can be a part of Philly Sports Shrine as we finalize a new home at the South Philly Sports Complex. And we're going to have some cool swag for you. So keep checking themuseumofsports.org. And don't forget to buy Lou's new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Just go to themuseumofsports.org. When we come back, the Eagles' one and only Freddie Barnett, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
1-800-324-4.
Did you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vive Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin Riley, Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860 and Facebook Live.
Well, Cunningham has to be real careful here not to just put it up for grabs. A turnover here will kill the Eagles.
And a sack in the end zone is not outside the realm of foot. Here comes Smith. There's Cunningham. Dodges left and puts it way downfield for Fred Barnett, who has the catch. And the race is on. There are no flags. A 95-yard touchdown.
Back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, brought to you by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our first guest, you see him there in the Zoom box, played the majority of his career as a Pro Bowl receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles in the 1990s. And he was known as, back then when he was just a little boy, Arkansas Fred, drafted in the third round of the 1990 NFL draft of Arkansas State. And you heard that clip coming out of the break there. 95-yard touchdown pass from Randall Cunningham. And that was your rookie year, I guess. It would become one of the longest touchdown passes in Eagles history. A member of the Arkansas State Hall of Honor and owner of Mitchell AI Architecture, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome to Mr. Freddie Barnett. How are you, Freddie?
Great, man. How you doing? Thank you guys for having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was fun. It was fun hunting down that clip, though. And it just, you know, I get the goosebumps watching that. It's just, it's a great play. So as I understand it, you're just telling us in the break, you're down in Bermuda these days, perfecting, I guess, what whiskey sipping and cigar loving. Is that it?
Well, that sounds about right. You hit the nail. You hit the nail right on the head. Yes, we've actually been coming to Bermuda for about 18 years, almost 20 years now. My wife has a company here.
Yeah.
And she does work for Bacardi. She's actually Bacardi's corporate interior designer.
Oh. Oh, wow.
And over the pandemic, we decided, hey, you know, let's just pivot and make a move. And we've been here ever since. And she's been doing a number of projects for Bacardi, which is one of the reasons we were able to acquire the architecture firm there in Newcastle, Delaware.
Oh, Freddie, you know, we accept samples. Yeah, we're not too proud.
Well, you know, I've been a whiskey collector, gosh, now for almost about 15 years. And when I got here, I met about seven years ago one of the owners of Michter's down in Louisville, and they're big Eagles fans, as a matter of fact. And once we got here, I saw that there was not a lot of Michter's on the shelves, and we worked out a deal, and now I'm able, through my company, bring Michter's to the island.
Oh, that's wonderful. Are they big whiskey drinkers down there? Weren't they mostly like summertime hot cocktails, gin and tonics, rum-based stuff?
Mostly rum. There's Gosling's rum that's based here, and actually Bacardi's headquarters is based here as well. My wife does a lot of work.
I did not know that.
In their headquarters. She's actually done a ton of design throughout the entire building, which is basically the reason we're here, basically. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's great for me. I, you know, being somewhat retired and being from Mississippi, I have a personality that's conducive to, you know, being laid back. I'm not really a beach guy, but you know, having a son and 75 on Christmas Day, you can't beat that.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you've got to become a beach person eventually, though. You can find lots of things to do on the beach.
No. You know what happens is, whenever we go to the beach, I have a son that's 7 years old. I have one that's 13 that's here. Yeah. My daughters are adults and out on their own. But the kids want to go to the beach. I just sit off and have me a cigar and you know, try to avoid all the sand. So I won't get it in the car. But Never really been a beach guy.
It's a beautiful island. It's a gorgeous island. Hey, you know, it's hard to believe. And, in my head, I do the primitive math. 25 years since we've seen you on the field. Is that right?
Really?
It's close to that, or maybe a little more. I retired in 97. And so, I did a couple years with the Dolphins.
Yeah, the Dolphins exactly. We here in Philadelphia don't count those. So,
of course.
When you were a young kid growing up in Mississippi, I mean, did you at any point, you know, was football going to be the thing for you? Or was it just something you did? You know, maybe you had some sports idols or some, you know, nice memories when you were a kid watching some of your idols. But was that something in your head? You're like, I'm going to be a pro and I'm going to be a receiver in the NFL.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, a lot of people don't know, I didn't play but 1 year in high school. And it was my senior year. My mom wouldn't let me play. She thought it was too rough. So my senior year, going into my senior year over that summer, I went to her and I'm just trying to really figure out what I want to do. I was a basketball player. I was an All-American high jumper in high school. And I just really didn't think that I could, you know, possibly play in the NBA. I was one of the greatest athletes, or I could say that came through that area. And I really thought football would be it for me if I had the chance to do it. I got that one chance and I got one scholarship. I had a few scholarships from some neighboring colleges like Ole Miss. You heard of them, Mississippi State. They gave me like half scholarships just from my 1 year. And I managed to get a full scholarship from Arkansas State, and I took it and I made the best of it. And, you know, just, sometimes people get a kick out of the fact that I played 5 years of organized football before I became a professional.
That's pretty amazing.
It's a lot of hard work and, you know, just a lot of, you know, setting goals for myself and creating these dreams in my head and making it happen in front of me.
So with that like short runway to take off for football, in your head, are you thinking, all right, I need like academically a backup plan? Or did you think, no, I've got the components, it's going to happen?
For me, it's about knowing exactly what I need to do and knowing exactly what I have a desire to do. And from that point, really being focused on every opportunity that's in front of me to make sure what I see in my head, I see in reality. And for me, of course, we had a backup plan. You know, at Arkansas State, they did a great job with us getting our degree. And
which is wonderful. I wish more schools would do that.
And but for me at the same time, too, you know, only playing that 1 year in high school and given the opportunity to have a full scholarship. And I don't want to say it was necessarily a setback, but it was just another hurdle for me to climb. Or to get over, shall I say. Arkansas State, of course, they gave me the only scholarship I had, but they were not a passing team. They were a wishbone team, so they ran the ball a lot. So me wanting to take that full scholarship, I just said to myself, well, if they, you know, of course, they don't run the ball a lot, but they will pass it. I just have to catch every daggone pass that they throw to me. And so I almost did that. As a matter of fact, there's about three or four passes that I didn't catch in my entire 4 years there.
And you were coming from Arkansas. You probably didn't know much about Philadelphia, and probably you heard some things that weren't true, you know, about our fans and so forth. What were your thoughts when you came here?
Well, you know, it was a very interesting city. As a matter of fact, I had no clue that I was coming to Philadelphia. As a matter of fact, I had conversations with the Jets and the Cowboys at the Combine. And I was told by the Jets that they were going to draft me. And the Cowboys showed a lot of interest that Jimmy Johnson was there. And interestingly, I ended up playing for Jimmy in Miami. But I never talked with anyone from Philadelphia. And I can remember being there on draft day, just kind of sitting in my apartment. And the first time the phone rang, it was a buddy asking had I got drafted yet. And I picked up the phone thinking it was a team. It was him. And I'm like, don't call me.
Oh boy, had you gone to Dallas in 1990? Oh, that could have been a very interesting run there for the next few years.
Yeah, so the Eagles finally called. I think it was Joe Woolley who called.
Right, and, Joe Woolley. Yeah, right.
And he said, "Are you interested in being a Philadelphia Eagle?" And I was like, "Oh," but I had no idea you guys were even interested. And of course, I said, "Yes, of course." And you know, coming from Mississippi and then Arkansas was like going from the front yard to the back.
Yeah,
but and then coming, I can remember walking down Walnut Street my rookie year after a mini camp, and looking up at the buildings. That was the first time I had seen tall buildings, skyscrapers, wow. and they really weren't skyscrapers. And I can remember this guy. I'm almost bumping into this guy, and he started laughing. And he said, "You're not from around here, are you?" And I was like, "No, no." But I love the city so much. When we first got the Philadelphia, they put all the rookies in Maple Shade, New Jersey.
Yeah.
So I found myself just kind of wandering around the city, you know, after practice. So I'm like, there's no way I'm staying in Maple Shade, New Jersey. It's kind of, you know, kind of reminded me at home. So once I knew that Buddy wasn't going to cut me, I moved to 11th. I moved in the city. I moved to 11th and Pine Street. So I was right in the heart of the city. So I love Philadelphia. I love the energy of the city. And it takes a special person, a special athlete to play in a city like Philadelphia. Every athlete can't do it. Trust me.
You had Buddy too, who was a pretty wild guy, a great guy. We loved him.
Oh yeah.
It's because he was so defensive minded. Lou, we've talked about this many times. He just let Randall be Randall, and that's that 95 yard, pass and catch and touchdown that we played coming out of the break. You know, that was sort of like just, you know, run around and make plays, and that benefited you. That's one of the longest TD receptions in Eagles history. Did you know that, or when did you find that out?
Well, I found it out right after. I think it was not soon after that I caught it, and I got. Well, we were in Buffalo, and I think the next few days, you know, a couple of people asked me, and you know, some of the media people said that Mike Quick had a 99-yarder. Right. I think it was against Atlanta. With Jaws. So I often tell Mike, I always call his name because everyone always says, is that the longest? I'm like, no. And they were like, who has the longest? I'm taking Mike Quick. So that's a play that, boy, if I had a half a penny for every time somebody mentioned it, I'd probably, you know, be rich right now.
Yeah. When you look back on those years, I mean, what's the one or two memories that stand out in your head?
Well, you know what? We had the funniest team. We needed a reality show, I tell you. We had the funniest team. These guys were not uptight at all. And thank God we didn't have, you know, social media like a Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. Oh, my goodness gracious. It would have been, they probably would have suspended all of us. But I think really the camaraderie that we had as a team, although we didn't win a championship, I can't remember one year that we thought we were close and we were going to at least do, you know, go very far. And that's the year that Randall got hurt. I think it may have been 92 or 93, somewhere in there. He got hurt in Green Bay. But, you know, the camaraderie with the guys and just being in the locker room and just knowing that each guy was really, really, we were for each other and we were all trying to win. And there was some moments even in practice where it was like war, and it was us really holding each other accountable, you know, and being the best we could be. Guys like Seth Joyner, I mean, you see Seth Niner, you know, how he talks about the team now, that's exactly the way he was, you know, in Randall's face, in Reggie's face, in my face. And it taught us, you know, what taught me as a young player to understand how to be held accountable.
Yeah.
And when, you know, when a guy like Seth Joyner is in your face, you know, you need to do what you're supposed to do. And there are times when, you know, when we're on the field and the defense is on the sideline watching the game, Seth is watching us on the field. You know, and, yeah. and you know, he's getting on the offensive guys coming off the field. Like, how the hell did y'all go three and out? You know, now we got to go back out and defend this team. And you know, when you have guys like that, it you know, puts you in a position to scale, so to speak. And Buddy was the same way. And he was a hard-nosed guy. And he was a guy that basically, if you had the ability to be on the field, you're going to be on the field. If you didn't, yep. you know, we'll see you later. And I've seen him cut people, you know, right on the spot. So, you know, that type of attitude and camaraderie and personality kind of morphed me into being this type of guy who, number one, hold myself accountable, and number two, always been a leader. You know, every time I stepped on the field, I felt like I had to lead all the way through your business endeavors. It sounds like it's
with you today.
Well, unfortunately, you know, my wife is like, look, we're not on the field. You're done. Well, you're done playing football. So stop screaming at the kids because they didn't brush your teeth.
Hey, I got to ask you before we go, did you collect any memorabilia? I know you said you got it all boxed up back here in Philly, but you got one or two that stick out in your mind?
I have some stuff. Dr. J, as a matter of fact, I saw Dr. J this weekend. I got a lot of Charles Barkley stuff. Balls. Of course, I got Ramble stuff. I got some Jordan stuff. Goodness gracious. I wish I had it here to show you.
Well, I'll tell you what, the next time you're back up here, grab a few of those things and bring them with you back home, and we'll do a little show and tell them. We'll do a little spot appraisal with our King of Sports collectibles, see if we can knock you out of your chair. But as you know, we're the Museum of Sports show. Have you ever wondered why there hasn't been a Museum of Sports in Philly, you know, given the fan base here?
I have wondered it, and I'm going to tell you guys something, and I don't know if you probably don't know it. I thought of this about 20 years ago and talked with a gentleman by the name of Maurice Floyd, who was a lobbyist, and we talked to a few council people, and we just didn't get any traction, and, you know, I was doing other things as well. And when I heard about it, I was like, yes, finally. And I think it's a great idea. I think not only does Philadelphia need it, I think Philadelphia deserves it. It's a great, I would say, the ideal city to have, you know, this type of venue. And, you know, when I look at some of the pictures, they're outstanding. And I think it's well needed, and I think it's well deserved, and it's, you know, I think it's going to be great.
Well, we're working on it. We're working on it, Freddie. Not as long as you thought about it, but we've been working on it for about 10 years now.
Oh, great! That's great. I tell you what, any help that I could give, just please let me know.
Thank you.
Absolutely, we'd love to have you on our advisory board. And before we go, we want to talk just very, very quickly about Mitchell AI Architecture. This was kind of a venture that, as you had said, you and your wife got involved in.
Yes. As I mentioned, my wife is a corporate interior designer for Bacardi, and most of her projects she did all those designs that you're seeing right now. That's some of the executive offices. And that's an office building.
They're
in
beautiful.
Delaware. And when she was doing some of her designs here on the island, she used Mitchell through a contact. And she's actually from Wilmington, Delaware. So a few years after, about 2 years after she was using them for most of her, that's her first room right there that she designed for Bacardi. That's called a Patron room.
Yeah, Patron. I noticed all of these conference rooms have bars in them.
Yes. So interestingly, the firm Mitchell came up for sale a year ago, and she was like, let's do it, please, let's do it. And I'm like, okay. So one of her design partners and his spouse, we're all partners in it, and it's doing great. It's a 55-year-old firm. They've been doing work for a very, very long time. And, you know, through some of the contacts that I have, we've managed to get, you know, more jobs here, you know, here and there. And we're in the process of hiring other people. So it's great.
That's great. Fantastic. Check out Mitchell AI.com. Did I get that right?
Yes, yes.
Eagles favorite, Freddie Barnett. We can't thank you enough for being on the Museum of Sports show. Once you, get a few of those collectibles, email me.
Sure.
And we'll have you back on and scare the hell out of you with some spot appraisals.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. And Fred, hey, good
thanks
luck.
So much.
I look forward to it.
Anytime. Hey, coming up, Philly pop sports artist Perry Milo when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a couple of minutes.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Two balls, two strikes to Bryce Harper. Suarez delivers. Swing and a drive. Left field. It's deep. It's going.
Yes!
And it is gone.
Yes! Yes.
It is bedlam at the bank as Bryce Harper has put the Phillies on top.
We're back on the Museum of Sports show, sponsored by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our next guest down there in the Zoom box, if you're watching on Facebook Live, he sort of got his artistic inspiration from pop art icons like Andy Warhol and Peter Max. And some of his clients include Sylvester Stallone, Julius Erving, President Biden, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, and Bryce Harper. And he's portrayed everybody from the Pope to Taylor Swift to Philly sports icons and Philly sports history. Ladies and gentlemen, a big Museum of Sports show first timer. Welcome to Perry Milo. Perry, how are you?
Hey, Doug. Great. Great to join you. Excited to speak with you.
Oh, great. Great to have you on here. Now, before we get started, I want to make sure I pulled one of these little tidbits off the internet here. That the way you sort of got your start in art was that you basically held your entire first grade class hostage and you refused to give up the paintbrush for a class mural. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I think first grade, we were doing Huckleberry Finn, reading the book. We were doing a mural on the wall. And it was my turn to, you know, take the crayon to the paper. And I didn't leave the wall. So I was reprimanded. And at that moment, I kind of knew that was it. You know,
art does me,
I don't do the art.
A temperamental artist.
But it's one of those things, though. Now, you're first grade then. Did you have a penchant for doing sports stuff? Or was it just whatever was in front of you or whatever you saw on TV or witnessed? I mean, what were the things that were kind of creating this indelible image?
So I'm born in 67. So the Flyers won the cup in 75. So that would make me, 8 years old.
Something like that. Yeah.
Second grade. Cause my boy in third grade. So I remember watching Channel 48 and Peter the Puck and Gene Hart. And, I mean, I didn't miss a game from the time I was 8 years old, any sport. I mean, I saw the Phillies collapse. What's the name of that game against the Dodgers that they called?
Who knows?
Black Friday.
Black Friday. I saw that game. I saw all the Eagles catastrophes, including, you know, Jaworski throwing three interceptions to the Raiders. I remember the Bob Nystrom call against the Flyers where he was off sides and the Islanders won the cup.
Yep.
I mean, I watched it all as a kid, and you know, I'm not too thrilled about the state of our teams at the moment.
Well, so you're a Philly guy, and that's what we talk about all the time. We said that there are kids that are 16 years old in Boston that have been to 10 parades. Right. You've been to what? One, maybe two.
Well, how many have we had? One, two, three, four, five. Is that it?
That sounds five. Right, Lou. Yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
We've had five in what, 100? How many seasons is that? Is that like 200 something seasons?
Easily. The Phillies are 124 years old.
Oh, it's way more than that.
You know, so it ain't easy, but we care. We're passionate.
We love it.
And we don't give up. We love it.
No, to answer your question full circle, I was drawing, you know, little caricatures of Mike Schmidt probably when I was 10 or 12 years old, and, you know, Bobby Clark with his missing his teeth, and the Philly fanatic as, you know, as young as the mid 70s, learning how to draw characters and stuff, that type of thing.
Yeah. And it's, I know you'd said, or you're quoted as saying that you don't do art. Art sort of does you.
Yeah, the art does me. I mean, I come to my studio, my gallery in Lambertville every morning, and there's, you know, I don't do it. It totally does me. I painted, I think I was painting Schwarber, you know, after that two home run game. Was that the first game in the playoffs where he?
Yeah, that was electric. Yeah.
And then, you know, then he just, you know, took a crap.
yes, he did.
You know, so I get inspired by things in sports, and I take it to the canvas right away. I painted the epic home run ball that Harper hit against the Padres, and I turned that.
That was that clip we played coming out of the break. That was cool. I mean, watching that again.
We never saw anything like that, and I think I wound up selling close to 2,000 lithographs between then and the holiday of that painting that I made of him.
Oh,
it's amazing. I mean, we've had a number of sports artists on, and every one of you has a very distinct style. You come from kind of that Campbell's soup can school of Andy Warholism and Peter Maxism. But it translates so well. You were commissioned for the Pope's visit in 2015. And you grow up very Catholic and very devout, and it left an impression on you getting to do that.
Yeah, well, I'm actually not Catholic. I come from Judaic Christian parents, but I'm more spiritual than, you know, Jewish or Christian. But
yeah,
and that wasn't commissioned. I created that because of the story I had connection with it, being born on St. Francis Day, and
that's right.
Having a mother named Angel and a wife named Angela. And I brought it to the World Meeting of Families that was throwing the event, and they just loved it. So that was a great retail merchandising deal that I created through that painting. You know, definitely a feather in my cap.
Hey, Perry, when you come up with an idea, how long does it take you from the idea to complete a painting?
Oh, I mean, you know, I can come up with an idea and do a painting in 2 or 3 days. And I don't know what you could see behind me. There's a painting of Sean Young, you know, the Eagles super fan. I don't see my screen, but...
No, we can see it. We got you.
It's on that Philly page if you were to scroll down. I mean, I probably spent 200 hours on that painting. It's got Cataldi in it. And if I move this, will you see it?
Yep. We got it. Well, it's a beautiful.
Yeah, perfect.
Got Gargano and Eskin and Cataldi and Mike Quick in it. And
it's a regular rogues gallery.
It's even got Missinelli in it, who's back. Yeah. It depends on how much information goes into the painting.
So a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but just
usually not. Well, something like that I probably spent good 10 days, 12 days on, but I could do a painting in 1 or 2 days, depending on the style of the painting.
And we're taking a look at some of what you got on your PerryMilo.com website. If you have not been over there, you got to check it out. The first one up there is Jason Kelce sort of raising his helmet. Was that the big farewell, I'm guessing?
Yeah, that was one of the farewell images for reference. I did that for a friend for a charity piece at an auction. I do a lot of philanthropic work, and a lot of times if it's in Philadelphia, I'll bring sports work. Yeah, so that was the goodbye from Kelce.
Well, Perry, if you have something you'd like to let us auction off for the Museum of Sports, we'd love to get it.
Yeah, we're going to make that happen for sure.
Good. I love that one of Kelce with the hat. Well, that's a classic.
Because art has been such a big part of Philly sports history. And the fact that, you know, there are diehard fans like yourself who, you know, love to translate, you know, some of those moments in the pictures are wonderful, but they're, you know, the photographs are wonderful, but just the way it's stylized on your canvases is just, I mean, it brings it home, and the athletes love it. You've been commissioned by, you know, countless athletes.
I've been commissioned by a bunch of athletes, but I usually, I just did a giant painting of Jalen Hurts last year. If you scroll down, that's there. And that got auctioned off for the Fashion Touchdown event, which is, there it is in the center, which is a Big Brothers, Big Sisters event. I can move the laptop around and show you some pieces, but I don't, as long as everything is still okay with what you're looking at.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Is that showing?
Yep, we got it.
There's the Harper and
Wiz Wit.
Here's one that I was supposedly had queued up for the parade for the Eagles. You could see.
Is that Lou on the pole, Lou? You said you couldn't climb those grease poles.
That's my jersey, number one.
Here's Charlie Hustle.
That's great. Yeah, look, you did it on an angle too. Wow,
I like that.
Yeah, it's a base. It's a diamond. Ah,
yeah, I love that. Better.
Wow.
And here's the big one I just did of Jalen, and I don't know if that's straight or not, but he's.
No, we got it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, we just showed that off your website too.
That's quite big. So I got a lot of sports stuff. I'm always making new sports art.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it's one of those things that we always ask our guests. We had Freddie Barnett on, and we said, did you ever wonder why Philly has not had a Museum of Sports? And he goes, I actually thought about doing that. What did he say, 20 years ago, Lou?
Yeah, 20 years ago.
And
the city council.
And
he
said they started to do some meetings with the city, and the city was just, and now 20 years later, you know, we're getting the traction. But did you ever wonder why there just wasn't that, given this context and this, you know, 100-plus-year history?
There's such context. I mean, so where's the new museum going to be? This is an incredible endeavor.
Yeah, we're finalizing a location.
Have it at the sports complex in South Philadelphia as part of the new Comcast Spectacor development.
Yeah.
It's a few years away, but we're working on it now. And like I said, anything you had that we can.
I'm going to help you out for sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I want some of my paintings in there.
Oh,
can you draw a picture of $10 million?
Yeah, I can draw that.
Hey, before we go, Perry, what's in your kind of own personal sports memorabilia closet? Have you collected anything over the years?
It's funny you just asked me that. Not a lot of Philly stuff, jerseys and stuff, but when I used to get off the bus, back in first, second, third grade, when I grew up in Lansdale, I used to go get off the bus. I used to walk into the 7-Eleven and I used to buy cards and packs for, what do you pay, 25 cents then?
Oh, yeah.
My best card is I'm very proud that I have under glass a Wayne Gretzky 1979 Topps card now for, what, 20, 45 years.
I think we'll have to I don't know. I don't know if we want. Do we want you to stick with us through the break, and we'll see if we can get a quick spot appraisal on that? Can you hang with us, Perry?
Yeah. Well, I don't have the card with me. It's at home in a drawer and locked away.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, don't worry about hanging through the break. We're going to ask Nick about it, and then we'll get you back on and bring some of your stuff because we always like to do. We like to scare the hell out of our guests with spot appraisals.
Okay. Yeah, I want to know what my card's worth. I haven't had it. I have not had what's called a PS1 or a grade yet.
Yeah.
But between 8 and 10, because once you get that grade, once you decide to get the card graded, I think it's graded for life.
Yeah. Give me that again. I'll read that to Nick when we come back from
break. I have the 1979 Tops. It's not the Ochobee or
right,
which is the Canadian publisher of the card. So it's a Tops Gretzky rookie card, 1979.
In good shape, right?
It's been under glass since I got it from the store.
Okay.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, we're going to ask him about that. And then we'll get you back on before the end of the year and we'll do a little.
One went during COVID for $650,000.
There you go. Yep. There you go. Hey, pop and sports artist Perry Milo, I thank you so much for being on the Museum of Sports show. This has been absolutely spectacular.
Thanks, Doug.
And like I said, Lou and I will be in touch because we'd love to make you a featured part of the museum. And it's so exciting that it's finally happening. And it's about damn time for Philly.
Well, I look forward to helping you and being a part of it. Nice to meet you, Lou.
Thank you. You too.
Perry, take care, man. We'll have you back. Get that card out of the closet.
I will.
And don't give up that paintbrush.
Listen, if you could sell that card for a couple hundred thousand, I'll cut you in on a nice commission.
Thank you. Got 20%.
Yeah. Okay. Bye, guys.
Hey, when we come back, our King of Sports Collectibles when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 Facebook Live. Back in a moment.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Perrant, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Museum of Sports show brought to you, as always, every week by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment with a hell of a logo to match. Up next, he is our king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, valued at well in excess of $50 million. And they are our proud partner in the Museum of Sports that's finalizing a home in the newly redesigned South Philly Sports Complex. Say hi to Nick Depatche Jr., everybody. Hey, Nick.
Doug, Lou, how you guys doing?
Doing really well. We had Freddie Barnett on today, who's got a bunch of basketball memorabilia, but he lives in Bermuda, and it's all boxed up back here in Philly. He's going to bring some of that on and bring some key pieces. Perry Milo, the wonderful Philly-based pop sports artist, said he's got a few items. He's going to bring them back on, but we said the one he's particularly proud of is a 1979 Topps Wayne Gretzky rookie card that has been under glass since he purchased it. And he hasn't had it graded yet. But when I was telling you during the break, your eyes sort of lit up on that. What are some of the things to ask about that, and where could that be price-wise?
Well, obviously, getting it graded is the first step. Let's just say if it's a gem mint 10, they're very particular, but if it is, then he could have a seven-figure payday.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's a 10. Yeah. A gem mint 10. But he could, he'll easily get six figures as long as it's, as long as it's in good condition, if it's even a 7 or 8.
Well, how many of those cards would be around? Why are they so valuable?
Well, first of all, it's Wayne Gretzky. When you're collecting cards, you want to go with the best of the best. You want to go LeBron in basketball, LeBron's cards, they sell. Jordan's cards still sell. In baseball, you got Willie Mays, you got Mickey Mantle. In terms of the newer players, Mike Trout, even though he's been hurt in recent years, he's been going for big bucks. But Ohtani's the king right now in terms of card collecting with baseball. And football, Brady's cards have been going through the roof.
But aren't there thousands of these cards when they're rookies? I mean, and so why would one card be worth $1 million?
Well, with Gretzky, in Gretzky's case, it's from what year, 1979? 79. There might not be as many around, but also to get high graded cards is rare, because those cards, people put them in shoe boxes. Way back in the day, I've heard this, they put them in the spokes of their bikes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And in Lou's case, he hangs them on the sun-splashed wall of his beach place.
They disappeared.
We have several of those items where autographs have disappeared, unfortunately.
So, let me ask about that. Does it degrade the card if Gretzky signed it, or does it make it more valuable?
Yeah, we were talking about that in the break, because you've sort of said it can go either way depending upon what the item is.
They used to say, do not get rookie card signed, and I never understood why, but today that's debunked. Rookie card signed, they add to the value.
Really?
Yes.
But when you're talking about potentially stratospheric value of like the Gretzky card that Perry Milo was talking about, is an autograph going to bump it up significantly more? Is that going to be kind of incremental?
That's a good question. I would say it's at this point, it's incremental if it's a certain grade.
Yeah.
Like you're talking about maybe tens of thousands on top of hundreds of thousands.
Really?
I guess you would consider that incremental, but maybe it's at that point, it's all relative.
Perry said he hadn't gotten it graded yet, because once you grade it, it's graded for life. So he's been waiting to get it graded.
And there's a whole process. You have to make sure if you're mailing it in, that you have everything done correctly. You have to get card savers and put the card in a card saver. And then you have to wrap it up a certain way, package it a certain way. It's a tedious process. Mm. And same thing, if you get it in person, you still have to get it in the card saver. So he's going to have to take it out from under glass at some point. Obviously be very careful not to bend the corners, ding the corners or bend it. I'm sure he will be.
Well, let's hope it's not stuck to the glass and he has to peel it off. Yeah,
Perry Milo, if you're listening, you got your primer right there of what to do and what not to do. Hey, Nick, how are things going before we go down at the museum? You're still on creating all sorts of new discoveries there. And I've been seeing the posts about people booking tours for sneak peeks down there.
Yes, we have a lot going on. We're going to be open, doing a grand opening where we open to everybody on, in the spring. The date is to be determined. Maybe we'll do a poll and we'll have people vote on several dates, but, we're going to definitely do that. We want to make it a nice event. We're going to invite some athletes, local athletes, to come, and it's going to be a good time.
Oh, that's wonderful. You can check everything out, all things at the depachemuseum.org. You can schedule a private sneak peek and see some of the items that are going to be featured at the Museum of Sports. Hey, guys, that's all the time we've got for this week. We want to thank our guests, Eagles Pro Bowler Freddie Barnett, Philly pop sports artist Perry Milo, and of course, our inimitable king of sports collectibles, Mr. Nick DePaccia Jr. And do not forget to buy Lou's recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. You can go to themuseumofsports.org and get a custom signed copy by Luigi himself. And keep checking themuseumofsports.org for some cool upcoming swag that we're going to have when you donate. All proceeds benefit the Museum of Sports that's finalizing a new home in the new South Philly Sports Complex. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Louis.
These are the good old days.
They are indeed. Enjoy them while you got them. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks,
let's go, Eagles.
Go Sixers.
And Sixers.
Somebody.